I do believe autumn has arrived, and so has the weekly scan of the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin. This is Spectrum West. Today, the village of Pepin is grabbing onto and preserving memories. We're going to talk with Christy Rundquist, the library director, working with others to make it all happen. Community elders are sharing stories and everyone's listening. Most importantly, young people who need the perspective. Jim Oliver welcomes Kathy Welch back to the Spectra microphone, this time with a director's eye view of the Thornton Wilder Award winner, The Skin of Our Teeth, opening tonight, if you're in the Thursday audience, at the Davis Theater on the UWRF campus. There's an interesting new cookbook that might be a must-have in your kitchen. The recipes are good ones, but it'll also give you something to do while things are cooking or baking. You can read all the other stuff that's in it. Uncle Egbert's Egg Book, author and editor David Tank, is with us this week. We also have a preview of an event that's about a week away at which hunters and fishermen, or fisher people, I guess, outdoors types and environmentalists will congregate to salute a couple saints who represent their proclivities and also another man with conservation clergy-like status, the last river rat, Kenny Solway. Dan Langlois is here to fill us in on all that's happening there. For now, though, here's a good way to begin, with a brief compendium of what's on stage in Western Wisconsin with the aforementioned Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Rocky Horror Show will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater today, Thursday, through Sunday at the Oxford Theater. Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present Death of a Salesman today and Saturday at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater. Madagascar, a Musical Adventure Junior, will be performed by the Phipps Children's Theater beginning Friday and continuing Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays through November 19th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present Wait Until Dark, November 2nd through the 5th, and the 9th through the 12th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Youth Ensemble of the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will present Aladdin today, Thursday, through Saturday. Guys and Does will be staged by Cumberland ETC Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and November 2nd to the 4th at the Cumberland Arts Center. The University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater will present Thornton Wilder's The Skin of Our Teeth today, Thursday, and Friday, and November 2nd to the 4th in the Davis Theater at the University. Boo, an evening of scary readings by the Northern Lakes Theater Guild, will be presented Saturday at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will stage Escanaba in the Moonlight, November 2nd to the 4th, and the 9th through the 11th. And Come Blow Your Horn will end its run Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. The place is called Round Hill. I'm guessing there's a geographic feature that spawned the name. It's near Arkansas, Wisconsin, and on Friday, November 3rd, it's the site where hunting and fishing will be celebrated. People who enjoy any aspect of the outdoors, or not, will be welcomed. And some folks will be honored. A couple are saints. The other, Kenny Solway, who knows, maybe someday. Dan Langlois, retired from the UW Eau Claire Environmental Adventure Center, and he paid us a visit. A gathering of hunters and fishermen to honor St. Hubert. Now, I was looking into him. His full name is Hubertus, but they called him Hubert just for the heck of it.
Right.
And St. Hubert is the patron saint of hunters and fishermen, and a Native American, also a saint. She's the patroness of ecology. So you're familiar with these people.
I learned the name myself, just like you.
You did.
I saw Kettery.
Kateri?
Kateri, some people say.
Tekakwitha.
Tekakwitha, right.
Now, is this a special one-time party, or is this an annual thing?
Well, I would like to think that it could happen annually based on the history of the Lower Chippewa River and the harvest season and the history of hunting and fishing in our state and the locality.
Tell us more about Round Hill, because I'd like to know who runs it, who works there, what other things happen there?
We are a Catholic nonprofit. We've been there actually since the year 2000, so we're all volunteers. We have a mission statement that talks about families and youth, mm-hmm. conservation, stewardship, education. We've done quite a few events and programs there, but we aren't very sophisticated in our PR. So here we are today.
How many acres is it?
112 acres, but we butt up against 13,000 acres of state property. So the property lends itself to programs like what we're talking about today.
Now back to St. Hubert for a minute. It makes sense that your event is on November 3rd because that's his feast day. And not so ironically, it coincides with the rut being at or near its peak.
Exactly. Yes, there'll be lots of people gathering in west central Wisconsin and actually statewide. People plan their vacations around the rut. Offices are deserted.
Deer plan on their vacations, too, getting the heck out of here.
Exactly. So it's a combination of lots of fun things.
Hubert, I was fascinated with him. I was raised as a Catholic kid, so we always looked up patron saints. I didn't realize hunters and fishermen had a patron saint. He was famous for hounds, dogs. The thing that happened to him is he had a vision in the woods that turned him to his faith. He was chasing a stag, a deer, and got into a clearing, and the deer turned around, and he had a vision of this cross between the antlers. He went, wow, I didn't expect that. And so he went back, and he found religion in certain ways. Here's an interesting fact. The Jägermeister thing. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, the symbol or the logo, like what you're talking about.
Jägermeister is a popular liqueur, of course. Jägermeister is German for master hunter. Yeah, the logo of that has that emblem with the deer and the cross in the middle.
Right. The master hunter, like you mentioned, the ethics and the comparison of sometimes the training that takes place to be a hunter in Germany, let's say, as opposed to some other place in the world where you maybe just pick up and go, as opposed to there where it's a long, rigorous training to have that term referred to your name, Master Hunter.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting how that differs from place to place.
Do you want to be Dan or Daniel?
Dan's fine.
Dan Langlois is with us. Drums Along the Chippewa and Mississippi is the name of the event. It is November 3rd in the evening, I believe. Everything gets underway at about 5 o'clock, and we'll have Dan give us the details. In fact, I can start alluding to details. Lots of smoked food I see on the brochure that was given to me. Homemade pie. What else is on the menu?
Some wild game dishes.
Samples?
That people can sample. They're more than welcome to do that. Lots of good food, and the idea is for you to gather with your hunting and fishing pals and your family, and hunting and fishing does that to people. It's that social setting, and come and visit. And you mentioned Kettery, and you also mentioned St. Hubert. It's also an opportunity to salute the last river rat, Kenny Solway, who's retiring, and this would be a great place and occasion to honor him as well. Folks know about him.
Oh, yeah. We've had him on the show many times. I've appeared with him at the Big River Radio Wave, and I have all of his books, and I've heard all of his stories. And I tried to talk him out of retirement.
Yes.
But I wasn't able to.
Maybe someday when you have a special event on that one occasion.
Yes.
Can't speak for him, but I'm hoping from time to time, you know, given his arthritis and his health, maybe he'll choose to step out and tell one last story.
Yes, I hope so.
Of many good stories.
So is there a Native American feel to this because it's called Drums Along the Chippewa and Mississippi?
Well, I think, Al, it's good that it's hosted where it is because of the tremendous history of hunting and fishing on the lower Chippewa River.
Okay.
We've actually done programs about this subject through the American Indian Studies program at UW-Eau Claire through Dr. Rick St. Germain and Dunn County historian John Russell that speak about the lower Chippewa River and the powerful connection of the Dakota Sioux and the Ojibwa since at least 1734, where Dr. St. Germain refers to it as the 120-year battle over venison on the lower Chippewa River.
Oh, wow.
So it's steeped in history.
Sure.
And hunting, fishing, and gathering, and I think it's most appropriate that the event is hosted where it is.
On the website that I found talking about St. Hubert and the reverence that people should have for hunting, not possessed by everybody who hunts, by the way. There's something I'd like to read. Hunting tradition in an historic sense is defined this way. Giving thanks to the dead animal and to God for the resulting nourishment must be what it's all about. Respect for the fallen and seeking a blessing for the meat and honoring the death of one of God's creatures must be the catalyst for these traditions. So, if you wish, say a prayer of thanksgiving or ask a blessing of St. Hubert after your successful hunt. Just remember to honor the death of the wild animal and utilize the meat with respect. It died so that you might live. Yeah. And that's what we've all discerned as the Native American way, that reverence for the thing that had given its life.
Right, and I think that it's important that they're there. And if you watch, Kenny would explain it that way as well. In this current age, there's a lot of these outdoor hunting shows, and oftentimes you'll see that spontaneously come out after somebody has had a successful hunt. They'll say something quite spontaneously or point upstairs, and there's a reverence there. And then, of course, there's that gathering afterward after they've harvested the animal and their friends and families are there and they look forward all year long to sharing in the benefits of the hunt.
A couple things that we didn't mention that are on the itinerary for that day: a silent auction, and there's going to be music. In addition to the Beef Slough Boys, pretty popular people, there will be American Indian drumming. That's always inspiring to me. I like that.
Right.
And circle drumming?
I don't totally understand the drumming, but I think that that culture just lends a lot, be it for celebration of the individual like Kenny, or for the hunt itself taking place. The next day is the gun season opener in Minnesota, so we're right close to the boundary. So it's a short show deliberately to allow those folks to get back across the river. And, of course, Wisconsin people will be bow hunting during the rut. So lots of visitors into western Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Either way, it's inspiring stuff.
Exactly.
It is. Anyone and everybody can attend.
Yes.
You'd like everybody to attend. Everybody.
We would love everybody to come and enjoy the festivities, especially giving thanks for the hunting, fishing, but also to salute Kenny Solway for sure on that long track record of talking to so many kids, schools, universities, up and down the Chippewa and the Mississippi River. I talked to him about it recently, and I said, my word, if I stuck pins in a map, I said, I'm not sure I could count the pins over the years where you've talked. And he said, Dan, I can safely say that I've talked easily within a 500-mile radius of Wabasha, Minnesota. And a lot of times on days maybe where he would have rather been in the woods himself back in the swamp.
Which is every day.
Yes, but he chose to be with young people to hand the baton to the next generation, to the next river rat that might be out there, and those young
people. Well, that can't happen. He's the last.
Well, we hope there's a next one.
The last of his generation of river
rats.
There we go. Let's put it that way. There are a bunch, I noticed on your brochure, of recipients of proceeds from this event. The technical title of the location of this event is Round Hill Conservation Center, also Camp Angelus, in or near Arkansas, Wisconsin. Tell people how we get to this location.
The easiest way I can describe it is if you could get yourself to Durand. There's a bridge in Durand. It's not a big town. Crossing the Chippewa River going west, and when you get on the west side of the bridge, there'll be a big blue sign giving you directions to Round Hill.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be the easiest way to get there.
The only other Round Hill I've ever been to is a golf course in California.
Wow.
So if people want more details than you and I have been able to impart, there is a website. What is that?
www.roundhillinc.com.
The event, again, is Friday, November 3rd. It all begins at 5 o'clock with the free wild game samples, and it goes who knows how long.
Huh? Right.
Tickets are available at the door. Are they available anywhere else?
Just show up.
So just show up, which hunters and fishermen like to do anyway.
Keep it pretty informal, and the main thing is that folks come and enjoy themselves.
Dan Langlois, thanks for being with us. This is important stuff. There are a lot of hunters out there, but I think it's important to do it the right way and feel the right way about it, don't you?
Exactly, Al. Yeah, thanks so much for allowing me to come in today.
Pepin reminisces and more coming up on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, offering over 60 areas of study, including new majors in data science and neuroscience, dedicated to preparing students for a changing world, luther.edu. Support also comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, collections comprised of art inspired by water from European and American masters, including Picasso, Audubon, and others. More about the museum at mmam.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Today, Thursday, is the final day of the 2017 Chippewa Valley Book Festival. Today, at 1 and 5 p.m., Jillian Weiss presents Permission and Provocation, part of the Schneider Disability Issues Forum. 1 p.m. at CVTC in the Business Center there. 5 p.m. at Centennial Hall on the UWEC campus. Also this evening at 7, it's a debut reading from the new literary journal Barstow & Grand. That's at the Volume 1 Gallery. Well, David Tank has been our guest several times. He's published books on 3D photography, a kid's book, Photos from the Past, comparing same locations today, and now a book all about eggs, Uncle Egbert's Egg Book. Since one never knows what's next from Mr. Tank, it's best if we find out just exactly where the pecking order comes from. You seem to have gone off on tangents, although there is there is similarity in that you appear to really enjoy finding old photos and artwork and incorporating them into your work.
I think very visually, so it's hard for me not to think in terms of the visuals in any of the books that I work with.
So did you see this roadmap of projects when you produced your first book of 3D photos?
No, not at all. Each one is just kind of developed off the last one. They all sort of have a life of their own. Uncle Egbert's Egg Book totally started when we got some backyard chickens. We didn't realize at the time that we were going to get three eggs a day. We have three hens and a rooster, and we're getting three eggs a day, and there's just two of us. What do we do with all these eggs? You know, you get pretty sick of scrambled eggs and egg salad. So we started looking for other recipes that used eggs. In the process of looking for recipes, I started finding all kind of fun pictures about chickens and eggs and jokes. It just became a fun project of collecting things. It was almost like when you think of the old scrapbooks that cooks might have collected where they'd cut out a recipe, tape it in a book, cut out a picture, tape it in a book. That's sort of what Uncle Egbert's Egg Book is, only it's a more contemporary version of that.
So we can call him Uncle?
Yeah, Uncle Egbert.
Egbert Fowler.
Yep, there he is on the cover.
That's him?
That's him.
You need to send one of these books to Ricky Fowler, the pro golfer.
Okay.
He'd like to have one, I'm sure. So are you envisioning yourself writing other books under a pseudonym of Egbert Fowler?
Not at the moment, but like you said earlier, I never know exactly where I'm heading.
Is there any kind of tangent going out yet, now that this is out? Because you said you work off of every project.
Well, right now, the tangent that I'm working on is back to the earlier tangent of the Postcards from the Past books. The Chippewa Falls book is about to come out in November.
This book has variations of recipes that we've all heard of, and then some we may not have ever experienced. Hummingbird cake, never heard of that. Congo bars, never heard of that. Some like kick-butt deviled eggs seem to challenge.
Kick-butt deviled eggs was actually my own that I've been making on my own for many years. And so I couldn't resist including that one in there, but I haven't found that exact somewhere else. When we were gathering the recipes, we used a lot of our own that we already had been using.
Okay.
We found some online. We found some of them through some old church cookbooks that we collected. And then we rewrote the instructions for all of them. We made sure that everything worked in a very step-by-step fashion. So even if you're not a cook, you can follow these recipes real easy. We tried them all.
Good.
And especially with the church book recipes, the instructions were awful. You know, like somebody
they
just
take some things for
yeah,
granted.
Somebody just says, you know, like, make crust in usual manner.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, a plus to the timing with this book is that eggs are getting a nice rap nowadays. They're saying we need eggs. We need more protein in our lives.
Yep. And the nice thing with the book here is we're expanding the way that you're eating eggs. A lot of them, you don't feel like you're eating eggs. They're as part of the breading for something else. Or in the Congo bars, basically they're what's holding it together.
Well, eggs hold a lot of stuff together.
They do.
Don't they?
If you make every recipe in the book once, I think you use 209 eggs.
266 in a year is what a normal chicken will lay. So you're not even taking all the eggs from a chicken. The record, by the way, is 371. I'd like to know how they know all this stuff. David Tank with us, Uncle Egbert's Egg Book, it's called. Recipes and other fun ways to enjoy the eggs from your backyard chickens. And you don't have to have backyard chickens to
you
have
don't
this,
have
just
to.
Because you have backyard
That's
chickens.
Right. That's
and some
how it
people
got
have
started.
Entertained it. Are they still debating that in Eau Claire? Are they still banned?
I think they are.
Okay.
I'm doing the book launch program this coming Saturday at Volume 1, and I'm hoping that a few people will come and talk about backyard chickens and their experience with it as well.
I'm sure there are communities who do allow it.
Yep.
So the recipes are nice, but it's the rainy day activities that give the egg brand new stature in the fun department. Things like, you may have heard of these, but never tried it, how to suck an egg inside a milk bottle, but finding a milk bottle is the biggest hurdle today, I
did find out that a Starbucks bottle will work as well.
It will? Okay. Yep. Bouncing an egg, you can do that. There are stories, there are interesting quotes, tips on other uses for eggs. There's a few jokes. I like the fact that there's Tom and Jerry eggnog. Is that the same as Tom and Jerry batter for the holiday drink?
Basically,
that's
yes.
Timely.
But it's homemade, and I did search out to find where that came from and went back to the original recipe from the hotel where that was created. So that is an old recipe that's in there that I did very little with as far as adapting.
You're well known, as we talked previously, for appreciating old photographs, bringing new life to them. All of the photos in this book, if I'm not mistaken, are kind of ancient.
Yes, kind of ancient.
Doesn't anyone take egg and chicken photos anymore?
Oh, maybe, there's lots of them.
Maybe that's a challenge.
There are a ton of pictures of eggs
there
and
are.
Chickens. You look on Pinterest.
Do you take pictures of your chickens?
I have a few, yeah. I'll be showing a few of those at the program.
By the way, my bucket list contains learning how to crack and open an egg with one hand. Are there any tips in the book for that? I literally have not tried it yet because I haven't wanted to waste a whole bunch of eggs.
Well, the easiest way to do it with one hand, I can't do.
No.
I just make a mess, too.
Because I see it on TV. And
I know. They look
so
great, and I haven't mastered that.
I'm going to.
So I'm happy still using two eggs and not having to wipe up.
I have to master it somehow.
It always looks so good on TV.
I'm guessing on YouTube there's got to be a video on how to do it.
Well, there's videos on how to crack a hard-boiled egg easier.
I read that.
That's kind of fun. You put it in a glass with some water, shake it a little bit, and for the most part, the peel will come off quite easily.
An inch of water. I'm proving now that I've read the book.
That's true. Yeah. I did discover, though, that if you shake it too hard, and I ended up with quite the mess in the jar of eggshells and broken egg.
So let's talk about Saturday's event. You've alluded to a couple of the details already. It is Saturday, 3 p.m., the local store, Volume 1, headquarters. Uncle Egbert is actually going to somewhat make an appearance.
There's a good possibility he might show up, We'll see.
What kind of a guy is he?
Well, he's kind of an eccentric nut. For the most part, he doesn't like a lot of publicity. He sort of stays back in the woods with his chickens. But he's kind of temperamental. As an editor working with him, some doubts about the guy. But, he's okay.
Did he take your criticisms and change his role?
Not well at all. No, not well at all. There's going to be some live music, too.
Really?
Yeah. Originally, I was planning to have this book launch earlier in the summer, and then I ended up having back surgery, so I had to cancel that. I know there were people who actually showed up for it, and so I thought, well, I've got to give them a little bonus added here, so we've got some live music going to happen as well. And if you showed up the first time and I wasn't there, I apologize, but I'll make it up to you this week.
When you do finally get your book, folks, I encourage you to go to page 48, because that is my favorite photograph.
Oh, yes.
I think everybody needs to have
the man
one
in
of
a full-sized chicken suit.
Feathers. I mean, there's feathers on this guy.
Yes.
I think it's wonderful. And I think this is a wonderful opportunity for henpecked husbands to...
Oh, that's good.
...to make an appearance.
Yes.
Get out of the house. Come see David and Uncle Egbert. How do we get the book?
Well, you can get the book at the local store.
That makes sense.
That's one place. You can get it at Bookins in Maine and Menominee.
Okay.
You can get it from egbertseggbook.com.
Wow. It has its own website.
It has its own website. Or you can order it from Amazon. Now, if you buy it from the first three places I mentioned, you can get the deluxe wire lay flat edition.
Yes.
Which is what I prefer in a cookbook.
Yeah.
If you get it from Amazon, all you're going to get is a regular perfect bound edition.
I predict that next time you and I see each other, my book will be stained.
Good.
As most of them have to
be. From that one-handed egg opening.
Or from me throwing eggs because I can't do it, as it turns out. David Tank. Uncle Egbert's Egg Book, recipes and other fun ways to enjoy the eggs from your backyard chickens. Good to see you getting healthier. Have fun Saturday, and thanks for joining us on WPR.
Thank you very much.
The event is Saturday, 3 p.m. at the local store in the Volume 1 headquarters, where I hear they're gearing up for the holidays so that you can do the same. Cool. Some generations remember, so others don't forget. The process is underway in Pepin, Wisconsin. We'll hear about it later on Spectrum West. Here's another Spectrum memo. The Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony will open their 37th performance season with their fall concert, an afternoon with Prokofiev. Sunday, 3 p.m., Gantner Concert Hall, UW Eau Claire's Haas Fine Arts Center. Middle and high school students from various schools in our community create a fun fall concert with pieces by classical composers. By the way, admission is free for children and students with an ID, and it's almost free for adults. It's only $5. Wow. This week on Spectrum West, Jim Oliver greets someone whose name is well known in West Wisconsin theater circles to talk about a play penned by someone else with a very recognizable name in larger circles.
The Skin of Our Teeth is a play by Thornton Wilder, which won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 1942. The theater department of the University of Wisconsin-River Falls is opening its production of The Skin of Our Teeth tonight, Thursday, and continuing Friday and next Thursday through Saturday at the Davis Theater at the University. Here by telephone to talk about the UW-River Falls production is the director, Kathy Welch. Now, that name may sound familiar to you. We talk to her a lot because she is co-owner and artistic director at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Familiar voice on Spectrum West. Glad to have you back.
Glad to be here.
Thornton Wilder's play is called An Allegory About the History of Mankind Told Through the Story of One Family. So what does all that mean?
Oh, it's a big monster of a play. Thornton Wilder was literally trying to encapsulate the history of all mankind in a one evening performance. And there is a nuclear family that we see from Act 1 to Act 2 to Act 3 in various different disasters, and they represent mankind. Their name is the Anthropuses. So it kind of references, you know, mankind, anthropology, whatnot.
Oh, that's where that comes from. I couldn't figure that out. Okay, fine.
and in each act, they're on the brink of a different disaster. And we float through time. There's a lot of biblical references. There's a lot of geological references. So time fluctuates between geologic time and then ancient history and then modern history, because they also represent a family, sort of a modern suburban family, 1942's Excelsior, New Jersey. So each act, the first act, there's an ice age. And in the second act, there's a flood. And in the third act, there's been this cataclysmic war that they've just come through. And they survive each of these by the skin of their teeth.
Uh-huh. The play is written in three acts. You don't see three-act plays much anymore. Are you staging it in three acts?
We are. I think it's really important with this particular play because of the nature of each of these disasters and how the family matures and develops and changes from act to act, I think it's pretty important to Wilder's concept that we see each of them individually.
How long does it run?
We just ran it for the first time all the way through at rehearsal last night, and we took longer breaks than we will for real because it's taking us a while to change the set at this point. But it's over 2 hours. It's probably about a 2-hour, 15-minute run or so.
Oh, so the audience gets a little bit of a break with the two intermissions then.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll give them time to reset.
Okay. I have some history with Wilder's play, Our Town, which it's the idea of the impact of students to see a classical play like The Skin of Our Teeth. In my high school years, more years ago than I care to think about, the school I went to had a junior class play and a senior class play, and generally speaking, the plays were always some fluffy little romantic comedy that, you know, everybody laughed, nobody thought too much about otherwise. When I was a junior, I played the lead in a play called The Groom Said No, sort of the idea, the kind of stuff we were dealing with there. But that same year, the senior class did Our Town. And I just remember sitting there watching a bunch of high school seniors with no dramatic training at all, and some of them had been in plays, but most of them hadn't. And yet it was just a magnificent piece of work because Wilder's dialogue, I think, just captivated everybody. I want to get your thoughts on the impact of classical plays on dramatic students particularly.
Yeah, I think this one in particular is really interesting to work on with this age student. They're learning it as almost a museum piece in some ways because it was 1942, which is ancient history to these kids. And so they have to learn a lot about the history around the time the play was written. But Wilder's just a genius in terms of being able to weave this allegory throughout that makes it sort of timeless. And so right now, he says in some of his critical writings about the play that it plays best when the world is in chaos. And so there's, you know, these 21st century students who are reading this work that's so old, but seeing these very relevant themes coming through. You know, the world is on the brink of war. There's iffy politicians in place. The ice age is looming. It's the wrong temperature at the wrong time of year. And so this great resonance that really pounds home the idea to the students that even a work, you know, a classical work that's the reason it's classical is because it can speak through time, and this one is just a brilliant example of that.
Mm-hmm. Wilder, who was born in Milwaukee, won 3 Pulitzer Prizes. The novel The Bridge of San Luis Rey in 1927, and the 2 plays, Our Town and The Skin of Our Teeth. Among other things, Our Town was noted for its minimalist staging. Does The Skin of Our Teeth follow that example, or do you have a pretty elaborate set?
Our version of it is fairly elaborate, although we do make a nod to minimalism with it, in that we don't have complete walls. It's not a full box set, and you can see a lot of the mechanics of the theater. One of the things Wilder was playing with, an idea that was very modern at the time, was this sort of Brechtian idea of showing the play, because the play, it's a play within a play. We see the actors break out of character periodically and talk about their opinions of the play, which aren't always good. So we've, in our production, we've kind of carried that through as well. So you'll see the stage manager running on and stage hands fixing the set when it needs fixing and that sort of thing. So it's minimalist in that sense, that it's bringing attention to the fact that we're watching artificial work.
How large is the cast?
Oh, golly, I think we're up to 26 in the cast, and then we've got a few members of an onstage band, and then, of course, a large stage crew, so it's a big show.
Hmm. I can't let you go without talking about the Old Gem Theater.
No, I'd love to talk about the Old Gem Theater.
I thought you might. So what's, you've got something called Aladdin, you know, that's a pretty familiar show. Is that something you've done every year forever, or is it?
Well, someone's been doing it every year forever. it's one of our original takes on a classic story. So it's not the Disney's Aladdin, but it's the Old Gem's Aladdin, and it's an all kids show. And I think this is maybe the 4th time we've staged it, but we change it every time depending on the cast and the actors we have. So this one, it's filled with all kinds of slapstick humor, this one, so I think it'll be fun.
Okay. So what follows after?
Our rehearsals will start immediately after Aladdin for our Christmas show. This year we're going to be doing A Year with Frog and Toad. And that'll be one that we have schools come to see for their field trips, as well as having public performances of it in December.
And then after the first of the year?
Oh, it just keeps going. After the first of the year, we're doing Stone Soup. That'll be our annual January audience participation play that's geared for the younger kids. And then we're doing another all-kids show, a musical version of Pinkalicious. And then in the spring, our big show for the field trips that come in the springtime is Pippi Longstocking.
Ah. The thing that you do a lot is the same show over and over again, because that's what the students want and that's what the teachers want and all of that sort of thing. So sounds like you've gotten a bit of variety this year.
Yeah, this year we're mixing it up a little bit. We're doing we've never done Frog and Toad before, and we've never done Pippi Longstocking before. So that'll be fun, and that's always really fun for the kids to do something they haven't seen here before. And the other shows we've done before, not every single year, but we know their favorites with the teachers, so we did bring them back.
Sure. Well, getting back to what we were talking about, the play is The Skin of Our Teeth. It's written by Thornton Wilder. The theater department of the University of Wisconsin-River Falls will open its production of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, and continuing Friday, and then next Thursday through Saturday at the Davis Theater at the University. And we've been talking to the director, Kathy Welch. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much. It was my pleasure.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, offering guided bald and golden eagle viewing field trips this winter. Registration is open at nationaleaglecenter.org/eagle-viewing. Spectrum Memo, the State Theater in Eau Claire welcomes the Marshall Tucker Band, 7:30 tonight if you're listening Thursday. And Saturday night, the Peacherine Ragtime Society Orchestra presents a silent film Halloween. Film with live music. Wow, like the old, old days. Details, EauClaireArts.com. When I happened upon the information about the next topic, I was happy that something I deem so vital is indeed getting done. It's getting done in Pepin, Wisconsin, and hopefully a million other places as well across America. Memories, the kind that reside in the hearts and minds of people with experience. After all, the older one gets, the larger our human cloud of stored memories. Those memories are being stored so they won't tag along into an afterlife without being shared for others to appreciate. The Pepin Reminisce Project, which currently consists of a book and a DVD, strives to preserve the past in human terms, written in recorded words, photos, paintings, things that were part of Pepin years ago, everyday things, or other unforgettable events like the crash of a B-24 bomber on the winter ice back in 1944. Christy Rundquist of the Pepin Public Library is a facilitator of the project. She joined us by phone earlier this week. Well, the book and the video are, I would guess, kind of hot off the presses, because the listening session was held in June, and you hosted that listening session and the reminiscing session at the library. Christy, walk us through the process for things like, when did the idea pop up? What did it take to plan everything? How did you get the work out?
Last fall, we had an opportunity to participate with a community engagement project through the Indian Head Federated Library System. And I was trying to think of something to do. And about that same time, we had several prominent members of our community who were in their 70s, 80s, 90s who had died. And I had thought how sad it was that these wonderful storytellers were no longer going to be able to share their stories. About that same time, Becky Johnson came in with this book idea, but had no idea of content. So between her idea of creating a book and mine of having content or gathering content, that's where the book kind of got together. I quickly put in the application, and we were approved to participate with this community engagement grant. So we were to identify what we thought was, you know, an issue, and I thought saving local history was an important issue. So we participated with some workshops over the winter, and then come May, I sent out invitations to 24 of our residents who I thought would have information, stories, and be willing to share. We also put out flyers and other publicity to encourage anyone who wanted to come. And we had a few that weren't specifically invited, but heard about it, and they came also.
Mm-hmm.
We gathered them all around, and I sat them in that kind of semicircle configuration, as you saw on the video, so that we could also video it. I wasn't really thinking of doing a DVD for purchase, but I at least wanted to have the conversation recorded in some manner to hang on. And then I tried to keep it very informal. I gave them a sheet of paper with like about 7-8 topics, but as I told them, it was just a starting place. And then it was just to let them go and to talk, because I knew if you get people together, one will start telling something, and then another one will either ask a question for clarification,
mm-hmm.
or another one will add a bit of detail. And that's what I thought was interesting with the story with the crash of the B-24 bomber.
Yeah.
How everybody had a different perspective and a little different bit of information. To me, those personal touches is what makes history really come alive.
Yeah, that was interesting to read. Some of the people's vantage point was at a distance, and then there was somebody who skated out, and another guy who took a boat with his son for the salvage operation. You know, in addition to all of the kudos that I'm sure you're receiving for having done this project, I'm going to add my own, because I think this is such a marvelous idea, because I've always been a strong proponent of talking with every generation, getting their stories before that generation isn't around anymore and those stories are lost. And that seems to be the impetus behind what you took upon yourselves, because you did literally have some people whose stories may have been lost. I started that whole process with my family, with my parents. Didn't get it as far off the ground as I had hoped, but my regrets are minimal. So way to go, Christy.
Thank you. And that was part of looking for these people who would have been my potential storytellers. I was talking to everybody and anybody I could generate interest with. And so many of them said, oh, you should have talked to my dad. My dad would have told you, but he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have talked to my Aunt Frida. Oh, but she's dead. And that's when I would come back to them and say, you could share their stories, even if they're not, you know, directly from them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's at least gather those stories, and let's get your stories, those everyday stories. There's still lots of stories that I would like to expand on. We've got a whole other list for a potential another edition.
But as you said, it's interesting, because once you open the floodgates for some people, they just keep remembering and remembering and remembering. And it's those little details that make those stories so wonderful. Again, congratulations. On the telephone with Christy Rundquist, she's director of the Pepin Public Library. The project is called the Pepin Reminisce Project, and the results, a book and a DVD, and who knows what else, because as you just heard, there may be a second chapter. Today, Christy, there are so many shortcuts to things and information out there, but when trying to document the history of a place or a small town, there really are no shortcuts. And actually, the gleaning of all possible information is found within the entire process itself. In the video, I did note a few young people in the audience, and I have to commend them for taking the time to actually sit and listen to people old enough to be their great-grandparents.
And we wanted to involve the students of the community. And going forward with another edition, we hope to involve them more.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of the, well, three or four, maybe five of the actual stories in the book were written by some of those young people that attended. And so we were hoping that we could have more kind of one-on-one, you know, a storyteller to a young person writing.
Sure.
We had a little bit, and that's one of the things we learned from this process, is maybe involve the school or do this a little bit more formally. We were rather informal over the summertime, and I don't think we had a real good hook into the student population.
Well, you know, I think this is true. Even given all of the amazing technology and revelations that young people have on a daily basis with using the technology they have, just the process of sitting down and listening to an octa or nonagenarian reminisce about his or her life can prove to be just as fascinating if they would only give themselves the opportunity.
And we had one lady that I had asked specifically to participate, and she says, no, I don't have anything to tell. Well, one of the young ladies lived next door, and they went over and they just sat down again, had a nice little conversation, and that became a 4-page article about the businesses in the 50s and 60s within the village of Pepin.
Mm-hmm.
So that, too, was another comment I would hear. Well, I don't have anything important to say. I didn't do anything, or I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has a story, and I tried to, you know, share that with them. You have a story, or you have a piece of a story, and those are all important to put together to be this whole mosaic.
Yeah, and even with all the chapters you have in this book, including artwork, we should make sure people understand there is original artwork here and photography. I would guess, I mean, you have things like Crossing to Lake City, Ice Harvest, bridge dedications, the B-24 bomber that you brought up, Pickle Factory, Pepin Remembers Laura Ingalls Wilder. So, and those are just some of the chapters in the current book. There's probably still, as you said, a lot more to tell. So there's a volume 2.
I hope so. And we have started a list of potential topics. And those would include, there was a couple of bank robberies within the village.
Mm-hmm.
And who would think that a village, you know, of, you know, less than 900 people would have 2 different episodes of bank robberies?
Yeah.
There's also a sad incident of a gentleman who shot his family. And, you know, the tragedies are part of history, too. So, you know, we might explore that. And I want more information on farming. You know, farming has changed so much in 100 years, and we barely touched on it.
Mm-hmm.
And another story that I think we have missed that I hope to track down and nail down is the beginning of the ambulance service, which was celebrating its 40th anniversary this past year in 2017.
Neat.
And how their first job, once they had established and got their first EMTs and the ambulance, their first job was to move the residents of the 3 small old Victorian homes that were nursing homes into the brand new facility that is still being used currently.
Mm-hmm.
It has changed names over the years, but that was their first job, was to move the residents into this new Pepin Manor facility.
I'm trying to remember an interview I did around the Pepin Courthouse.
And there would be that, too. This, with this first volume, because we didn't know exactly how it would work and how we could gather things and put the whole book together, we concentrated mainly on the village of Pepin and a little bit on the outskirts, the little bit of the town of Pepin.
Sure.
We're looking to expand now to go for those stories of Durand.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, small, well, it's not an actual village of Arkansas, but the community of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
The community of Lund, which is basically disappearing off the face of the map.
Huh.
And the village of Stockholm.
Sure.
There are marvelous stories of the various businesses and people that were in those communities, along with all of the rural valleys, Hicks Valley, Lost Creek Valley, Volgas Valley. So there's lots of expansion that we can then go for and get more of these stories. I've already got one from the Meridian area about the Chippewa River and running steamboats on the Chippewa River and mm-hmm. a picture of the steamboat. So we already have one story ready to go for our next edition.
Yeah, that's all good stuff. And I'll bet you, Christy, you have turn the switch on some light bulbs You know what? We have to do that for our community or our county. As we've alluded all along, there's a book and there's a DVD. How do people get them if they want them?
If they are interested, we do have a few copies of the book available. They are $25, and we have copies of the DVD. They are $15 each. You can contact us at the library, Pepin Public Library, and you can call. Our information is on the webpage. The phone number is 715-442-4932. And you can just give us a holler. If you need it mailed, we would charge with postage. Or you can stop in and pick one up.
Okay.
We do have, again, several that's available. And I believe we still can order reprints. I'm not certain when the deadline is for the cutoff on that.
Okay, sooner the better is the way it sounds. The website is pepinpubliclibrary.org. Christy Rundquist, director of that library, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so very much, and we are very excited to hear from others out there if they have stories of the Pepin community, the Pepin County community. We would love to have your stories or photos or original artwork, and who knows, another edition may be coming.
I think that's going to happen. Thanks, Christy.
You are so very welcome, and thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Spectrum Memo at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls. Jeff Daniels, Ben Daniels Band, Tuesday, 7:30. Glenn Everhart's Heebie Jeebies Family Comedy Music Show comes to the Heide Sunday, November 5th. That's at 2 p.m. Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts Menominee welcomes Mediums at Large Friday evening at 7. Saturday, the music of Steely Dan. And more from some of Madison and Dane County's best musicians, known as Steely Dane. 7:30 p.m. showtime, MabelTainter.org. Saturday's a big day in Carson Park, beginning at 8:30, as the Indian Head Track Club hosts the 49th Carson Park 5K and 10-mile run and walk. There's also a boogie run. That's a Halloween thing. Costume contest and pancake breakfast. Details at IndianHeadTC.org, also at CVMuseum.com. Man, always stuff going on. Thanks to Becca for her weekly releases, to Kate for archiving, to Captain Dean for piloting this vocal vessel. Next week, rehearsing from a couple of symphonies, Taste of the North, and more, always more, on Spectrum West. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Bye now.